words of Israeli President Isaac Herzog, be installed. No one in Tel Aviv wants to accept the Biden-Blinken idea of having the Palestinian Authority preside over Gaza, since giving the PA that new authority might be the prelude to Palestinian statehood. Now that the fighting has resumed and expanded into the south of Gaza, we need to reflect on the realities of this war. Ceasefires are temporary, the fighting is permanent. The Gaza death toll stands at around 15,000. About half the buildings there have been either badly damaged or destroyed, and some 40 hostages are apparently being held by forces other than Hamas. Many of the young men in Gaza who have lived through Israel's attack will be recruited into a revived Hamas. And in Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu is still in command, blocking roads to peace. I'm Mel Gertoff for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to an end-of-the-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 5th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff and Jasmine Moneymaker. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Potter, Jill Freitas, Alex Gonzalez, Danielle Smith, Eric Galatas, and Joe Ullery. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. In 2020, 82% of Portlanders passed Measure 26217, the police oversight measure. It called for a new independent community-led oversight board to investigate police officers, recommend policy, and impose discipline. An all-volunteer police accountability commission, also referred to as PAC or PAC, was called on to develop how it would work. They worked for 2 years to submit a proposal to City Council. Just a few weeks ago, the City Council pushed through a serious reduction in the proposal. Former members of the PAC sent a letter to the city asking a number of questions about how the changes would be implemented. On Monday, December 4th, the City Attorney's Office hosted a public meeting on the new code package. KBOO's Jasmine was there and brings us this excerpt.
I'm Judith Mowry. In my day job, I'm the Interim Deputy Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And I am always happy to facilitate meetings with the community because I miss the community. So I'm here to help out tonight.
My name is Stephanie Howard, and I'm with the Mayor's Office. I'll hand it over to Heidi.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Heidi Brown. I'm with the City Attorney's Office. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm really happy to be here with all of you and appreciate folks taking time to come in person and then also for folks online. Look forward to the discussion. Lisa?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lisa Rogers. I'm a deputy attorney in the City Attorney's Office. I use she, her pronouns, and I just echo the appreciation that's been communicated by Heidi and Stephanie so far.
Hi, Darian Jones. I use he, they pronouns. I'm the Senior Policy Director for Arts, Culture, and Equity for Commissioner Ryan. I've been working on this project for a little over 2.5 years and excited to be here with you all tonight.
And hello, everyone. My name is Jackson Paul, joining from Commissioner Mingus Maps's office. My pronouns are he, him, and I advise the commissioner on policy matters surrounding transportation and public safety. Thanks so much for having us here.
Good evening. My name is Grace Zarpak, and I'm a policy advisor for Commissioner Renee Gonzalez. I use she, her pronouns, and like everyone else has said, thank you for being here. I started working on this in January when my boss was elected.
Good evening, everybody. Angela Rico, she, her, ella pronouns, and I work with Commissioner Carmen Rubio as her senior policy advisor on public safety, and I'm also a liaison with Prosper Portland, one of our bureaus. Happy to be here.
So this question is about the budget of the why the board has a budget that's larger than IPR and internal affairs combined, and why would they need to limit the number of investigations it should do, keeping many of the investigations under the jurisdiction of IA threatens the trust the community will have in the system by keeping police investigating their own. And there was concern about maintaining status quo and dissatisfaction. So we will talk about the respective categories, but in the city's proposal, we took some of the categories recommended by the that were adopted by the voters and expanded on it, and took the PAC's recommendations and expanded on some of it. For example, the charter and the PAC recommended that the board investigate force resulting in injury. We expanded that to all claims of excessive force. So even if somebody claims that an officer used force, but they didn't actually have an injury from that, it just made them uncomfortable or something like that, that still will go to the board. So we kept that within their jurisdiction. So there's places where we expanded on it and places where we took it out and moved it over. But I think that the we weren't looking at the budget as far as in deciding what the jurisdiction was. We were focusing on what cases make the most sense for each entity. For truthfulness cases, you know, I know there's some questions about that. We'll get to that later. But those cases, for example, are challenging cases in any entity for a public employer. When you're when those go to arbitration, they're hard to uphold. And IA has historically done a pretty good job of those, and oftentimes they don't even go to arbitration on the truthfulness.
Can you say what that means, though?
So that's an allegation that the officer lied.
And when we say it doesn't go to arbitration, it's because the discipline imposed is not grieved, or it is, yeah, it's not grieved.
It's grieved and it's not taken to arbitration. And I will tell you that when you have dishonesty for a police officer, that is almost always going to be a fireable offense. So we do, as you all know, the charter language says that the jurisdiction of the board is the cases that are listed out, the force cases, the discrimination cases, and the violations of state or federal constitutional law. All those cases by charter go to the board. And in addition, cases as the board deems fit, sees fit, or is mandated by code. What we set up was that if there are other cases that the board sees fit to take on their own, we just want to have that. They will go to council, we'll make a change in the code, put it under the board's jurisdiction. We just wanted to clear so that people know ahead of time, where is a complaint going to go? If the board at any point feels it's not being handled appropriately by IA, they can look at those cases and decide to take them.
It seems like if we're saying that one of the criteria for success is that the cases aren't grieved and taken to arbitration, we're basically saying that the criteria for success is that the police are happy with the result.
The police are what? I'm sorry. What
the police are happy with the result because they are not contesting the whatever punishment was imposed. So explain to me why that's incorrect.
What the goal is that the discipline should be upheld if it goes to arbitration. So if discipline is not arbitrated, then whatever the board imposes is what the discipline is. End of story. But if it does get grieved and it goes to arbitration, our goal is that the board's discipline is upheld in arbitration and not reversed.
That is the criteria with IA that happens a lot, is that they go to arbitration and are upheld. Because what I have heard is that the cases going through IA are not going to arbitration multiple times. And that's because the police are not contesting the discipline, which is successful. Suggest that they are happy with the outcome.
Well, I think so the question was, and I want to repeat it because I don't think the was a concern that the police are happy or content with the outcome, the chief's decision on the IA investigation, because they don't go to arbitration. So I would say a lot of cases, there's a grievance filed, which is the first step to get something to arbitration. So often we'll see a grievance, But then whether or not it goes to arbitration is a different thing. And there aren't a ton of cases that end up going to arbitration. They just kind of sit there, and then eventually if the union decides not to move it forward to arbitration, it goes away eventually. It'll get withdrawn. And then the discipline that was imposed is upheld. So for example, when I'm talking about truthfulness, you're talking about terminating an officer because that's 99.9% of the time that's going to be the outcome of a truthfulness allegation. When an officer has been determined that they've lied, they're going to get fired. And so unless that goes to arbitration, it's going to remain as upheld. And I think our concern was to ensure that regardless of which process it goes through, whether it's through IA or the board, personally, I'm one of the people who handles those arbitrations. I want to have the best case I can if it's going to get challenged. Ideally, it doesn't even get challenged. That's the best case scenario, because that means the board made a good decision, that the union's looking at it and saying, we're not going to win on this. We're going to accept it.
I'm Catherine McDowell, former PAC. And the question I wanted to get at is sort of the secondary question here, which is not so much the budget, but the jurisdiction of the board. So I hope it's okay to ask about it at this time. The question I had, and this also gets into the rulemaking issue. So we read the code that the board could handle the cases it sees fit or mandated by code. So we listed the things that we thought were important that the board should handle. And the result of that was really that the board would handle all complaints except officer complaints about another officer, which would be handled by internal affairs. So that was our vision. And that was as a result of a lot of discussion and community input. Then looking at your revision to our proposal, you know, it's a much different division, where internal affairs handles many more types of cases and the board handles a much smaller number of cases. And then what I'm hearing is the way you all read the charter is that the board could then decide to expand to that larger list that we first had, because that would be as it sees fit, not necessarily because code dictates it. So that's the first question. Is that true, that the board, through its rules, could expand to the list of cases, types of cases that we had envisioned in our proposal?
We put it in that they would go back to council to have code change to expand the jurisdiction so that it's in code. But that as sees fit means that if the board deems fit for something type of allegation to go to them, they go, they tell council, it's adopted because charter requires them to adopt that. On the other hand, if council feels there's something that should go to the board in addition, they can also adopt and make that change as well. And the point of that was to just have a clear system up front of which avenue your case is going to go. So at any point when the board says to council, hey, change the code, we want these types of allegations, the charter says you have to say, okay, we're changing the code. So,
and my follow-up question is really on the rulemaking issue, because you know, already two or three times you've referred to the board's rulemaking authority. We've taken this out, but the board in its wisdom could add this back in by rulemaking. And what we've been very concerned about is that in reviewing the rulemaking process in the city, it seems like in most cases, the code allows the board, it gives the board the ability to, you know, individual bureaus and bureau directors, the ability to issue rules. But in this case, the board does not have that ability to issue rules. The board can propose rules to the city, you know, the city administrator ultimately, I think the whoever runs the business office now in temporarily. So that seemed to me, especially since IPR has the ability to adopt its own rules, that seems to me like a reduction of the board's authority vis-a-vis IPR, because it can't issue its own rules. So in some ways, this gets to our concerns that you've taken a lot of our proposals and said, oh, the board can adopt the rules if it sees fit, but then you've reduced the rulemaking authority of the board to less than what IPR currently has. So maybe you could speak to that. I'd appreciate
it. Yeah. So I know you're familiar with this, but just for other people, as far as rulemaking authority, when you look at it, we've got our city charter, which think of as our constitution. We've got city code and ordinances, which are like state law. That's the equivalent to that. And I know you know this, Catherine, but and then we have administrative rules that flesh, and each one fleshes out a little more, right? So at the top, you have our city charter on the oversight system is like 3 pages long. The code, your recommendation was 96, ours was like 27, 28. It's still filling out a lot of the details. Then you have administrative rules that fill out even more details. And then underneath, I have policies that fill out even more details. Policies are still within the authority of the board and the office to adopt those policies of how to run everything day in, day out. Administrative rules are a step up from that. So for example, our HR administrative rules for the citywide, those go to either the chief administrative officer has the authority to adopt them or the city council does. It's not something that like HR can just adopt and say these administrative rules are going to apply. So we tried to follow that process that was already set up at the city for administrative rules, but then said with policies, which like you said, every bureau can adopt their own policies, including IPR. So as far as you're talking about policies, they can adopt their own policies. But when we're talking administrative rules, those generally either go to the chief administrative officer or later it'll be the city administrator or to council. So that's kind of where we tried to set up that same process.
I was just going to say that under the current system, IPR has the ability to adopt rules, not just policies and directives, but rules. And so that's why it seems to matter that it's a reduction in the current authority of the oversight board, because it's taking that rulemaking authority away that IPR currently has, coupled with the fact that you've taken a lot of our proposals and put them in that bucket. It just, that has kind of shined a light on exactly what rulemaking authority the board has. And it seems like right now it has less than IPR currently does and less than other bureaus do.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Dan Handelman. I use he, him pronouns. I'm a former member of the Police Accountability Commission. And I do appreciate that we're having this meeting. I think the thing that got left out of the letter we sent you is the opening, where one of the concerns we expressed is that this is being seen by the city, I think, as exclusively about the employees who are being complained about. And the way we approached it was, this is about the people who think the police did something wrong to them. And the flow chart that you showed and the answer you gave to this question kind of indicate that the city still doesn't understand. One of the reasons people don't like using the system right now is they don't want people in the police bureau investigating police and leaving cases to internal affairs when there's a community member involved is going to ensure that this system doesn't get trusted by the public. They're going to have a $12 million budget. There's no reason to limit the number of cases they review. The charter, you said the word, it says or in city code. That means as they see fit or in city code, meaning the board gets to decide what they want to investigate, not that city council has to sign off on it. So that's interfering with their independent authority to require them to go to council to get that signed off on. So that's a number of different thoughts, but they all kind of come down to the same concern, which is, you know, like when you go through the flow chart, the board, the members of the board, the community members on the board don't do anything with the case until it's already been investigated and sent back to people with a proposed finding, and then they finally get to hear it at the very end of the process. So that it goes against the spirit of what the charter is all about, which is a community-led oversight system. So I'd like you to address that and then the specific way that interacts with these other questions you already answered.
Well, I think we have a different interpretation. You're talking about the or, and I think what when I was already answering Catherine McDowell's question and talking about the or, the way we read it is that it's as the board sees fit, and we're just setting up a process so that people know which way to go and it's clear in code where you go. It doesn't mean that the board at any time can go, and as they see fit means council needs to adopt those changes in their code to allow for that to go to the board. So it is not stopping the board from taking whatever types of allegations they see fit to take on. There is nothing we have done that has stopped that at all. Just setting up a process for it to happen. Additionally, as mandated by code, if council decides that they think other cases should go to the board and they feel like, hey, we think the board would do a better job with these types of cases, they can also make that determination. But it doesn't take any authority away from the board to get that change made at all.
I would also like to just point out that I think, Mr. Handelman, you have to understand the difference between the board and the PAC, because the board is the one that will decide what is within its jurisdiction through the process Heidi identified. The PAC made recommendations and we appreciated those, but you can't conflate what the PAC wanted with what the board may want once it's stood up. And I think that's...
He was saying he thought it was the PAC job to design that process.
I think that the PAC's job was to make recommendations for that process. Yeah, I agree with that. But I think that it doesn't mean that the PAC decides the same thing as what the board decides, right? They're not interchangeable, is I guess my point. City Council has always been part of this process. And Commissioner Hardesty, I think in December even, spoke to the PAC and specifically pointed out that the board should be working with council. So I don't think that's a new idea.
We have right over here. Thanks.
Thank you. So this is concerning language, first off. Is it possible for, the language that's inputted to be manipulated by the authority that we're talking about to basically make the case for them no matter what via the language? And also my next question is also my mother was killed by what's called a stinger by the police. They were using a stinger, which basically shoots radio frequencies and you can't see it. So basically, how do you prove that this right here is going on if you have something that has no track marks? So back in 2008, my mother was killed by the stinger. I believe the Portland police use it's what's called a stinger. My mother suffered depression already, really bad, for many years, and this stinger, which is I believe from drones, shoots RF frequencies, which I have the patent numbers right here if you'd like to see, and it killed my mother. And so I was unable to prove this for quite a while. So ultimately, where is, when I get the chance to prove it, is there a is being as 2008 and I can prove it now, is there a time frame on? Okay, so yeah. So
glad you asked that. I mean, first off, I would say we removed a timeline for the PAC had recommended that a complaint be brought within a certain number of years, and we took that out. I will say, as an attorney for the city, if somebody has a complaint they want to bring, whether it's 10 years old or 5 years old, they can bring it forward. Especially if it's a discrimination claim or harassment claim based on protected class status. Personally, no matter how old that is, I'd like to know about it. Whether we can take much action on it discipline-wise, I don't know, because there will be some questions about stainless, but it's still really important that we know about it and so we can watch out for it and ensure that that's not happening going forward. So no matter what, but for one, if there's a regardless of the forum, whether it's internal affairs or whether it's the community lib board, if there's no way to prove it, it's not going to matter which place you go to, because...
Thank you. Hi, my name is Faith Aiken. I'm a former member of the PAC. Appreciate the time, all. And I really want to spend time. I think the conversation that we're at now feels incredibly critical around the jurisdiction of the board's decision-making. This feels like a place that there is significant discrepancy between what we've understood as the PAC, as our recommended work, body of work, and what I'm now hearing from you at the table. I want to make it very clear that we were very clear on our scope and what we were to do with our recommended findings. And we had an attorney that the city paid for to write a code package. So I want to make it very clear that we did not overextend our scope. And so there's no miscommunication from what we understood. And if we were overextending our scope, we should have been told that months ago, rather than having this come back to us to respond to in 2 weeks, minding you that we're all here voluntarily, having met over 2 years voluntarily, whereas paid city employees, you had every opportunity to come and tell us what we were doing was not within scope. So either we need to extend and push to the DOJ that we need more time, or you're breaking the commitment that was outlined to us. And so either state it clearly that you're breaking the commitment that was outlined to us, or we need to extend the timeline, because 30 days is egregious. And then for you to tell us that we overextended our scope is just unacceptable. Like, it's unacceptable. So I think that, I know you have a presentation outlined and I appreciate the work you've done on it, but this feels like the biggest component of the night is what is within the jurisdiction of the board, what goes into city code versus the rules that they're allowed to make. Why would we have spent 2 years making recommendations for then the board to just determine what, for a new set of volunteers to have to come back, is an egregious sign of mistrust.
Thank you for that, Faith. And I definitely, you know, want to acknowledge the frustration that I've heard from the folks who work very hard on this. I know that. We all know that you worked incredibly hard. I do need to push back a little bit, though, on whether or not you heard that you were overstepping, because I think, you know, if I mentioned Commissioner Hardesty in her visit with you in the December meeting, and she was very, very transparent about her concerns about overreach. She was very direct about things that, in her words, were not your business. And that included things like, you know, budget, that included things like bargaining, that included, you know, several different things. And she was very clear. Now, after the work session that was had, I believe, in April, City Council wrote a letter back trying to articulate concerns that they had at that point as well. And so I just want to push back to say that, you know, to the idea that no one was communicating with you that this, there would might be some overstepping outside the scope of the charter, because I do think that that was happening. And I do think that, you know, those of us who were, have been following this since the beginning were aware of that as well. So I would encourage anyone to go back and rewatch some of those if they're not sure if that's what was said, and feel free, you know, feel free. We want to communicate, and I understand the frustration. 30 days is not a long time when we're talking about 2 years of work. I think we all understand that, and we are doing, you know, what we can do to try to address that now. Anything that anyone wants to say about the jurisdictional piece?
On the jurisdictional piece, I think it, to focus on that itself, Faith, I just want to respond that in some areas we expanded what you had recommended. Just so folks know, of the force cases that that IPR and PPB receive, allegations of excessive use of force, 70% of those are what we would call Category 4, where you're alleging that there was not any injury. So we added those. So if you're saying there's, I don't know, I'm totally making up numbers here. If there's 100 cases of allegations of excessive use of force, you left off in the PAC's recommendation, there were 70 of those that were not going to get heard by the board, and we added those back in. So only 30 would have gone. So I do want to say we expanded in some places, and that was significant. It's not a small number. So I really wanted to stress that. There are other areas where we said, let's see how this goes with IA doing it, because there are good reasons. For example, criminal law violations, that's what police do. They investigate violations of criminal law. If they're not doing a good job at that, then we have other concerns. If the board feels that they're not doing a good job with investigating the misconduct allegations, then they go to council and say, we want those allegations going forward. It doesn't change the fact that the jurisdiction, if the board feels that they look at these cases and say, these aren't going the way we want them to go, they change that. So that remains the same. I think we just looked at it and said, there's some areas, there were many areas you recommended that we adopted, and there were some areas that we said, let's try this other way and come back to this. But the door's open.
That was some of the public meeting held by the Portland City Attorney's Office on code changes to the new Civilian Police Oversight Board. The City Attorney's Office will accept comments through December 15th on their proposal. My thanks to Jasmine for their help on this excerpt of the meeting. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, continuing on Saturday, December 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Portland. December's live concert features one of the leading voices in contemporary folk and Americana, Amy Spies. Again, that's the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, Saturday, December 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements